I think it's important that we start at the sort of global level and thinking about why are we trying to do blue-green infrastructure, where are the benefits? It's so important that we keep our carbon down, that we actually reduce the carbon dioxide emissions and other greenhouse gas emissions. We have already got a problem with the seas and the oceans becoming too acidic. And if they become acidic, they lose the reefs in front of the islands, and then there'll be a much more erosion on coastal places. So it's very, very important that we all play our part in producing a lower carbon footprint. And so how are we going to go about that? If we look at water as a precious resource, it's been spoken about already, but it is a precious resource. And if we are wanting to reduce our own carbon footprint, we can do one thing, which is actually reduce our water consumption, because water's got a lot of carbon in it. We've pumped it, we've treated it, it's got a lot of embedded energy in it. And then we go, when we finish using it, we pump it and we treat it again. So by simply reducing the amount of water that we use individually, we will reduce our own personal footprint, carbon footprint. We've got to expand that.
Down arrow.
Okay, thank you very much. And just to sort of get us thinking, when I was on the National Drought Committee, we started off with a drought, so start off at the bottom, and people become aware, it hasn't rained for a bit, has it? Oh, isn't it nice, you know, I haven't had to use my umbrella, isn't that good news? Wonderful. Then concern develops because it hasn't rained for a long time, has it? And the reservoirs are beginning to come down in level, and the rivers are beginning to come down, and you get panic. And you can see that I've taken it off an American website because it's the 911. And then we start setting up the committees, doing the rain dances, trying to sort of sort things out. And so panic sets in. And so whilst we're setting up the committees, it starts to rain. And I can remember that we produced our drought report in October 2012 when everybody was wearing Wellingtons. And nobody took a blind bit of notice of it. So apathy set in, and we'll be that position until we get to the next drought. And you could almost do the same with flood. We're very active just after it's flooded, and we talk a lot about it, and we do a lot of studies, but then we subside into apathy again. And then when it floods, hasn't anybody done something? And you could stack up all the reports and use them as a good sort of flood defence, really. So I thought this was just a good reminder that we've got to make decisions and do something. That's the lesson I want to take out of there, is that we talk and we've talked and talked and talked about SUDS for so many years, and we've just got to do it. And this is what Mark said, is we've actually just got to go ahead and get on with it. And we've got quite a lot of channels. As a lot of people know, I'm not only involved in rivers, but watercourses as well, artificial watercourses. And we've got as much length of watercourse in the country as we have river. So we have got a lot of channel there to use. I'll skip this one because of time. Now, one of the things that we've got to do for our channels is make sure that we keep the capacity there. When we're trying to use our channels for moving water, we have got to keep its capacity. And you get sediment in there, you get vegetation in there, and if we look back there, we get neatly stacked shopping trolleys, and we get a collection.
It's neatly stacked
with that. That's quite an effort. That makes a bridge, that one does. So maintenance is absolutely vital, and your point about having 40-year commitments is absolutely vital, that we've got to have a commitment to look after it. And if that channel was down in a culvert or down in the sewer, it's not so easy to see that it needs maintenance, but it still does. I get very concerned at the beginning of every winter when somebody stands in front of a large pile of grit and salt and says, when it gets icy, we've got plenty of grit to put on the roads. And I sit there and I think, yes, and when it rains, it goes down into the sewer. And nobody talks about fishing it back out again. So we are very proud of this very large pile of grit and salt. But we've got to think about where it goes after it's been useful on the road and how we're going to get it back out again. And there are issues like that for maintenance that you can see them when they're channels, you can't see them when they're fatbergs inside the sewer. I started off working for the GLC, you know, in a previous incarnation. And one of the things that they made all the young graduates do was walk through the sewers in London. And it was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I did sort of get to the point where I was quite interested in what I was doing, and the team looked round and said, firemen have normally given up by now, but they didn't realise that I don't do giving up. So they put me through quite a challenging route, but I did learn a lot, and for years we've been talking about maximising the capacity of the sewer, and I'm delighted to hear about the control mechanisms that you're doing, because we do it with rivers, we play with our weirs on our rivers to actually manage the flood flow through the watercourses, and so doing it in the sewers is something that we should be getting on with. The other thing about designing these is they must be designed to be maintained. And if you actually look at the top right, somebody has thought it would be a good idea to put a row of trees along the top of the bank, which means that the only side that you've got for maintenance for a vehicle is on the right-hand side of the bank. Right? And if somebody then decides that because people are cycling there, they need to put a fence, then you really do have trouble, and it's very much more expensive trying to maintain that channel. Because you need space for that kind of size of machinery to make an efficient pass for maintenance. Now, I always think that this picture of England, Wales and Scotland looking rather united at that particular point in the coldness that we were experiencing, does remind us of the climate change challenge. And when we look at the risk assessments that has been done by this country, water figures in all of the themes, whether there's too much of it or too little. But water is an integral part of all of those themes. And we must work out how we're going to manage all of that. And I would reinforce the messages that we've been having so far, is that it does mean organisations talking to each other and actually identifying what are the common goals and how they're going to get there. Because we've got an increasing problem in this country, is that something has to be done, but the organisation that is capable of doing it doesn't see it as a priority. And like the water company in the example that we had, cannot justify spending money on that because it's not a priority for them. And so we've got to work out how we're going to do that a lot smarter. Now, have we got evidence of climate change? Well, in the last decade, we've had the most extreme something on record, whether that's heat, drought, wet, high temperatures, cold temperatures. We've had, on each year, over the last decade, a record of something. And I think sort of 2012 was a sort of, it started off as the record drought and ended up as the record flood, all in the same year. So we do actually have an increasing challenge. I think that's fair to say. And when we're looking at water, we have to remember that water level management is important because it can give structural damage. If you've not got the water passing through in the correct channels You can get erosion under bridges and cause a bridge collapse. You can get erosion that causes houses being undermined. And if the water level goes too low, then you get subsidence, which is a very big problem in London as well. So it is important we think about the structural damage that water can do. I challenged our local council because they were picking up the York paving stones in our road and replacing it with tarmac. And I said, is that impervious tarmac or permeable? And they looked at me and said, of course it's not impermeable. That's too expensive. I said, well, it's a shame, because we've actually got now acknowledgement of the fact that if I were to pave over my drive, it would actually have to be permeable. But we're not making rules for local councils to say that when they actually are redoing their pavements, that they've got to be permeable. And that's quite a large area in a catchment. And we're going backwards in most, because you all know that when you had your paving stones, they were on a bed of sand, and if it was a broken one and you stood on it, the water squirted up the back of your leg. Yeah? So there was a water storage underneath the paving slab. And it did help to attenuate. So we've gone backwards in those sort of things. And we've got to pick up all of the opportunities and not say, oh, it's only so small, it doesn't really make a difference. Those sort of things are all going in the wrong direction. Now, this is an example from Holland. It's a point that was being made earlier. There, you can see that they're holding a picture. There's the main channel, and that's going to remain. But they've actually put a little re-meandered channel beside it to create some storage, some holding back the water, and some habitat. And it's surprising how quickly that will green over when it's new. People get very concerned about it, but it does green over very quickly. As far as planning is concerned, it's a pretty good idea to sort of start off in the right location. And there are too many of this sort of example. And we really ought to get that sorted out. When we're looking at urban landscapes, on the left we've got Ashford here. This is on a slope running down away from us. And here the rainwater is coming in and being detained in these flat, these are very new, putting into the flower bed here and likewise. And that's in the centre of this dual carriageway road. So again, you have to try. So it's an attempt to try and capture the runoff from the road, to try and capture the grit that comes with it, some of the tyre pollution, and trap it in the flower beds. On the right, which I applaud, and we ought to be doing more of this. It's a shame that we see so little of that kind of thing. We have big car parks, and you can see where the water runs, and there's a big flower bed, but there's never any connection between where the water's running and a little inlet like that that would allow the water to run into the flower bed in the car park. You know, we go along and water it. You know, you have a big tanker come along and squirt water, probably tap water. So connecting all those sort of things. Tolworth makes me feel very sorry for this tree. Because the hole in the tarmac was barely as big as the trunk. So I don't think it was ever designed to be bigger. And its leaves fell off very promptly after it had been put there. Now, it may well be that that is supposed to be permeable material, but I have yet to identify that it actually is. I hate to think about who's going to replace a pipe, because the paving in front of every shop is a different colour, layout, pattern, everything. And so if the first utility that digs a trench along there, I'm going to be standing on the pavement watching them, trying to put the blocks in an orderly fashion so that they can remember how to put them back again. It's a nightmare. It's quite extraordinary what they've done there. And the trees just have got very sick and died. And there's some conifers at the far end, which didn't take very long to curl their toes up. That's a shame. That's an opportunity missed. You know, it's not dished in the centre. I know there was encouraging people to cycle down it, but you could still have gently dished it to encourage the rainwater to go in there. Instead of that, it's... So that's an opportunity missed. Because when you go to France, they think their trees need a lot of watering around the bottom. So you've got a nice big area for the trees to attract the water, and quite deep section. So you've actually got an ability for those trees to A, get a drink, and B, do something effective in terms of minimising the runoff. Can't resist putting Thames Barrier in, as somebody said, you know, I've got to say about it. But we've actually got such an increasing amount of development behind the Thames Barrier now. But we have to remember it's not just the barrier, that's the photogenic one. We've got 30 major barriers, 400 minor barriers, and hundreds of kilometres of wall that make up the Thames tidal defences. And all of them have to work to be effective. So it's important that we think again about systems. And we've got to think about how we're actually operating as systems. Now, Bedford, they had a major housing development. They tens of thousands of houses. And it was made possible because there was a lot of development of the river channels and watercourses. And here you've got a very effective area, wildflowers, very pretty area. And this is where you need it for health, for recreation, for amenity use. And a sort of natural sort of basin there that will actually take the flood flow to enable the housing. So when we're looking at it, we do need a variety. Some people, I've heard some developers say, oh, because we can't put X in, I can't do it. Well, what about A, B, C, D, and all the other things? We do need the variety. We do need to be able to do what's appropriate for the circumstances. And France is a useful location for taking these sort of photographs. It's quite easy to find green walls. It's getting better in this country, but we're still not good enough about it. So green walls, a little channel that's beautifully engineered into the landscape. So you've actually got a very pretty sort of attractive one, and I showed one earlier about what the Hogsmill looks like through coming through Kingston. I mean, absolutely dreadful. But this is a very attractive way of putting a river through an urban area. And this is the sewage treatment works, which not only had a roof over it, which is quite unusual for a sewage treatment works, but it had a sedum roof over it as well. So it blended nicely into the area, and it was doing its bit for providing more habitat. So, River Quaggy, I'm very pleased that we turned this park into a park that nobody went through because nobody went through it, and people walked around the outside in order to sort of go diagonally. We chose to use it to alleviate flooding in a neighbouring borough, and it did take about 2 years of negotiations to actually get this far, to put this meander through it and put the water feature in. And subsequent study has revealed that it's put the house prices up, people use it because people use it, it's used significantly by the families in the area, and it's now a very useful health resource for that particular area. And it's now, as I say, used because everybody uses it. So it's popular, and it's a very... house prices have gone up, so... Somebody said earlier, Olympic Park shows what you can do. They didn't have that much time, but they did something about that. The damage to infrastructure if you don't manage the water. Skip that one. And just to finish and say that we do need, and I'm echoing what other people have said here, multi-purpose solutions. But the problem we've got in this country is how do we actually get people to all chip in? Well, we just got to work, we've got to sit around the table and work it out and get on with it. And I think that's important. We shouldn't let that stop us doing it. We do need to use costs and benefits for the whole variety of benefits that come from these sort of schemes and not just look at the drainage benefit. So we need to do it from a catchment management point of view. So thank you very much.
Thank you.